Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today on the program, we're speaking with Dr. Barry Kudrowitz. He is the professor of product design at the University of Minnesota and author of Sparking Creativity, How Play and Humor Fuel Innovation and Design. And Dr. Kudrowitz, thanks for joining us here today on EPN.
Yeah, really happy to be here.
And the pleasure, certainly all ours. Really appreciate your time. So to kick things off here today on Enterprise Radio, I think we all want to innovate and we understand that it is a good thing for society. But how could humor lead to innovation in serious disciplines and industries? That's the first question. And would that just not lead to silly ideas? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So humor and creativity are both about making non-obvious connections. So I'm not going to get too much into theory, but there's the incongruity theory of humor, which says that something's funny if two things come together that aren't expected to come together, but somehow make sense. And then there's the associative theory of creativity, which is that creativity is about making non-obvious connections between seemingly unrelated things. And they're the same thing. This theory of creativity and this theory of humor basically say that what makes something funny is the same thing that makes something creative. It's about putting two things together that you weren't expected to come together, but work in some ways. And the end result of that connection is either a ha-ha or an aha, or sometimes both. And there's a lot of things that in the world that we think might, you know, that might be silly now, but in the future will be viewed as innovative. And in the future from there will just be commonplace. So you know, to give you some examples, like Rosie the Robot from the Jetsons, right? That was in a cartoon. It was a ha-ha. There's this robot that goes around, it talks to you, goes around the house, cleans the floor. And that's real now. That's the Roomba. And even when Roomba came out, people were like, who's going to buy that thing, right? I don't need a robot to clean my floor. But now a significant number of people have Roombas, and there's a whole bunch of side industries on similar robots for cleaning different stuff. And in my book, there's a bunch of examples of this from history where these things that were once jokes, like mechanical trousers from, Wallace and Gromit are now real things, that are solving real problems. And it goes back to that, that non-obvious connection. And if you find one of these non-obvious connections, the result could be laughter. You know, but it could also be like innovation in disguise.
I'd say that's a perfect way to lead things off here today. Good stuff. Good feedback from you there. I really appreciate it. Now, play like humor is also something that tends to be associated with children and silliness and not business or work. How is play something that can be harnessed in industry to lead to innovation?
Yeah. Okay. So when you view an activity as play, you are going to be more creative in that activity. And I did this study with 100 engineers where we gave them this creativity test called the alternative uses test, where you come up with ideas for alternative uses for an object, like a paperclip. And we also asked these engineers how playful that activity was after they completed it. And we collected all this data from these engineers. And we found that the people who had the most ideas also were the ones who viewed this as play. In fact, they had twice as many ideas as the people who viewed that same activity as work. And there's a bunch of other studies that have found the same thing. When you view an activity as play, you're going to be more creative. And there's several theories why that is. And one of them has to do with the concept of flow. So when you're playing and when you're being creative, you're in a state of flow, which is this mindset where the challenge matches the skill set. If the challenge is too difficult, you're going to be stressed out. And if the challenge is too easy, you're going to be bored. So for every challenge, there's an ideal level of skill set for you to be in that sweet spot for you to be fully engaged and for you to view it as play or for you to create and innovate. And video games are really, really good at keeping people in the state of flow. So you beat the first level, the game knows exactly how good you are, and they up the challenge to keep you in that like flow channel. There's a lot of things that we can learn from video games, not just about challenge, but also about creating immersive worlds and storytelling. And all of those things contribute to adding play value to an activity. There's a bunch of examples, again, in my book, but also in the world, where you see adding play value to something makes people more engaged in the activity. There's a couple examples I like to use, but in Schiphol Airport in the Netherlands, they 20 something years ago, they started adding the fly to the urinal, and it decreased spillage in those urinals by like 80%. So in that case, adding a little challenge element or a little bit of play to an activity that is normally a chore made it more engaging and more effective. There also in the Netherlands, there's these trash bins at Efteling theme park that talk to you and they say, "Papier here, you throw your trash out here." And the children run around the theme park and they clean everything. And that's an activity that is normally a chore. And they transformed it into play. I think to wrap this up a little bit, we learn best through play. That's how animals learn. That's how children learn. Everything we learn, social skills, emotional skills, physical skills, we all learn through play as a child. And it's weird that when we grow up, they say, no. That's not how you're going to learn anymore. You're going to copy my notes. You're going to listen to me talk. And we discourage play. But we need more recess. We need more encouragement of play in the workspace and in the world and adult play if we want more innovation and more creative workers.
It all makes sense and some great examples to back it up as well. Now, is creativity something that you can learn to be better at, or are some people just not creative? That's always a curiosity. And if so, what are some simple things that people can do to improve their creative abilities? Give us some input on that.
Yeah, you can be more creative as measured by standardized creativity tests, which is kind of a complicated idea there, or by real world design challenges. And this is something that I tested and studied over the last 10 years in a creativity course I teach at the University of Minnesota. We tested the students before and after the course using a series of creativity tests and real world design challenges. And we had those design challenges scored by experts in the field before and after the course. And we found that everyone, almost like 99.9% of people, improve their creative abilities. And the people who improve the most are the ones who initially had the lowest creativity scores, which I find really interesting. So yes, you can be more creative if you want to be. And some of the things that you can do, well, you could take a creativity course like the one that I teach. You could read books on creativity. Some of my work is in improv, and improvisational training also improves creativity. Design thinking courses have also helped. Some of the maybe the less obvious things, there's studies that have shown extroversion and novelty seeking to be characteristics of creative people. And so the more you get out and explore the world and try new things and explore things that you wouldn't normally explore, the more connections you're going to have. And in the moment, that might not be fostering creativity, but in the long term, all of those bits of information and different ways of doing things will be stored away for you later on to use when a problem comes up. And that's why things like extroversion tends to relate to creativity. It's not that they enjoy talking to other people. It's just that extroverts are often collecting non-obvious bits of information from different people, from different environments, from the world. But you can collect different bits of information from magazines and the internet and watching TikTok. And it's really just about getting out there and learning new stuff and saving it away for later.
Really some great information shared already today. And Dr. Kudrowitz, we really appreciate your joining us. We're speaking with Dr. Barry Kudrowitz. He is the professor of product design at the University of Minnesota and author of Sparking Creativity, How Play and Humor Fuel Innovation and Design. And he's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, in the book, you have several chapters on improvisation. What are the connections between improv with creativity, innovation, and design?
Yeah, so in my research, we did a number of studies related to creativity, creativity testing. And in one of the studies related to alternative uses, we were testing professional designers, engineers, students, but the group of people who had the most creative ideas were actually professional improv comedians. They were coming up with not just better alternative uses, but more creative product ideas than professional product designers. And so I started studying improv comedy and how they teach people improv. And what I found is that the skills that they're teaching you in improv training are very similar to skills for team-based idea generation: listening, building on ideas, deferring judgment, coming up with lots of ideas. And so I tested this. We did improv warm-ups before idea generation, and we found that increases the number of ideas you have in a brainstorming session by something like 30%, more than if you did an activity by yourself or nothing at all.
Great feedback coming from you. Really appreciate that. I'm sure the listeners do as well. I have one more question for you. Throughout the book, you discuss many different methods of idea generation and have an entire chapter dedicated to how you run a brainstorming session. What advice do you have for people who want to facilitate an idea generation session?
Yeah, for sure. So having a great facilitator is really important. And I talk through this in my book on how to be a facilitator and how to incorporate humor and play in the entire design process, and it's specifically in brainstorming. Having a good prompt is really important. And in some of my studies, we looked at the number of constraints on a prompt. And we found that about two constraints is like the ideal number of constraints for a challenge to be engaging. So if you think about the game of Scattergories, for example, where you have to come up with something within a category that also starts with a certain letter, right? That's those two constraints are what make it playful and engaging and not too complicated. If you just had one constraint, like things that start with the letter P, it's not that playful, it's not that engaging. And if you start adding more constraints, it starts being more stressful, right? This goes back to the concept of flow. So having a really good prompt is really important for brainstorming. Also, the number of people. If you have too few, you just don't have the energy. So, you know, 5 to 9 people is probably about the right size. If you have too many people, it starts breaking out into their own groups. I like to draw ideas because visuals are really helpful for recalling all the concepts later on. And the most important thing is quantity. It's as many ideas as you can. Going back to the improv philosophy, we're deferring judgment here. Every idea is great, right? We're not going to critique ideas, good or bad. We can critique later. The important thing is coming up with as many ideas as you can in a short amount of time, and then discuss, you know, or tear them apart at a later end. This should be like play. It should be, there's, you know, it's okay to mess up. It's okay to say stupid things, and we're going to be fine with it. We're not going to punish you or critique you for saying something silly or playful in the moment.
Awesome to have had you with us here today. Can't thank you enough once again for your time spent with us. And if listeners wanted to pick up your book, Sparking Creativity, or more information on yourself, where's the best place for folks to get further information?
Yeah, so the book's available at Routledge website, also Amazon.com, and I think also BarnesandNoble.com.
Fantastic. And I assume you do have a personal website as well. What is that?
Sure, yeah. My personal website is wonderberry.com.
Hey, and that works, and we'll have that link within the show notes of this broadcast and other links as well. Dr. Kudrowitz, all the best, and thanks for joining us here today on EPN. Certainly was our pleasure.
Oh my gosh, thanks so much for having me on the show.
Certainly was our pleasure. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Barry Kudrowitz, professor of product design at the University of Minnesota and author of Sparking Creativity, How Play and Humor Fuel Innovation and Design. And for all the details, visit wonderberry.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.